Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
And drive left field. Benintendi coming on, dives, and did he make the catch? He did. He got it.
Here we go. It's time to party right here. 3-2.
High drive. He crushed it. It's a grand slam.
Swing and a miss. Frankly, it's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Welcome to Benny and the Bets Podcast.
Can you believe it?
Here's your host, Terry Cushman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Benny and the Bets podcast covering Boston Red Sox baseball. Tonight, we kind of have a more of a unique show. We are going to kind of do the state of the Red Sox-Yankees rivalry. We do have a Yankees blogger on with us, and we're going to kind of see what kind of mischief they might be up to and see how they're going to kind of stack up against us with maybe an eye on the Blue Jays, because we know they're up to a bunch of mischief. But joining me tonight from the regular crew is Job Goddard. Job, how are you?
I'm doing great, Terry. You know, it's been kind of a quiet off season. Hasn't been a lot going around from a Red Sox perspective. So it's good to be back with you. It's been a while, and I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe we'll get some news on Sagano, the Japanese pitcher that's going through the posting process right now. Admittedly, I should probably be a little more familiar with that than I am, but he does have to make a decision, I believe, by the 7th. So I think that's Wednesday.
7th at noon, I believe.
7th at noon. Okay. So we'll definitely be paying attention to that. We lost the other pitching, the other Japanese pitcher on the market. I don't know if I can call them prospects or not, but he apparently, the Red Sox were his second choice. He chose the Padres because the weather was better.
I don't know about you, Terry. How tired of hearing that are you? I'm pretty tired of hearing that the weather's not good.
Well, truth be told, I'm moving to the Carolinas in a year. So I do kind of sympathize, but come on. You know, once April gets here, it should be tolerable. So I guess I kind of do agree with you. But anyways, joining us tonight, we do have a special guest. He is a contributor to Call to the Pen, which is a pretty well-known baseball blog, Matthew Orso, and he covers the Yankees deep in the heart of the Yankees fan base. Matthew, how are you?
You know what? I'm good. I'm just looking around my shoulder. No surprise attacks. No Red Sox fans. No David Ortiz jerseys coming after me with ropes and swords or anything. So that's a good sign thus far.
Yeah, I told Joe before we came on, this is very much going to be a peaceful, or at least we're going to attempt a peaceful you know, debate despite the rivalry. So I think you're safe tonight.
All right. I got my lightsaber and my other holster just in case.
Absolutely. So let the audience know who you are, where you come from, why you love baseball, and you want to talk to a couple of Red Sox knuckleheads.
My name's Matt Orso. I write for Call to the Pen, a few other places. I'm an author on two books on baseball history. They're both out of print now, so I won't bother going into the names of them. But I've loved baseball ever since I was a kid. My grandpa taught me everything about the Yankees and the history of the game, and I've just loved it ever since. And, you know, I love talking to anyone about baseball, even Red Sox fans. Though I feel like right now we have more of a common enemy, and their name is the Tampa Bay Rays.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that would make me happier than seeing the opener implode on itself and destroyed and never used again.
I'm a purist as well. Job, what about you? What do you feel about the opener?
You know, I was very against the opener when I first saw it happening. I'm coming to love it because we don't have the pitching in New England, in Boston, to really work with a five-man rotation. So I'm coming to love it if we can use it right. What I do hate that the Tampa Bay Rays do is this two times through the order thing, but I won't rehash that. We already talked that one through.
All right. I can see it, you know, maybe in place of the five starter, but it's not something that I would like to see, you know, more than one time through the rotation, especially, you know, being in a big market. But yeah, so I can kind of sympathize with you, Matthew, on that as well. So let's just kind of get into it. You know, there's some pressing issues in the Bronx regarding the Yankees. And I guess the elephant in the room, and I'm kind of surprised it's the elephant in the room, but DJ LeMahieu seems to be the number one free agent target that most Yankees fans want to sign. There seems to be more urgency, you know, on the part of them that the Yankees sign LeMahieu. And coming from a team myself that desperately needs pitching, I'm like, you guys are aware that Jordan Montgomery's your number two starter if the season starts tomorrow. So where are you on that?
We need to be going after LeMahieu. Because here's the thing. There's so much depth in the starting pitching market that you can get a bunch of these guys relatively cheap. There is no replacing DJ LeMahieu in that Yankees lineup. The next best free agent, second base type player is Colton Wong, who is a fine defensive ball player, but can't post an OPS near 100, OPS plus near 100. DJ LeMahieu last season hit 364. The season before that, 327, 26 bombs, 100 plus RBIs. He has been the best and most consistent Yankees player in these last 2 years of injuries with Judge and Stanton and all the guys who just can't seem to stay on the field. He's the one guy who's producing. And we can get starting pitching, and I hope probably talk about that later too with this team, because you're right. I don't want to wake up on opening day and see Jordan Montgomery as my second starter. That is true. But let me tell you, the Yankees do not go anywhere in the playoffs if we do not get DJ LeMahieu back. Because then you have Aaron Hicks as a leadoff hitter. Then you got strikeouts galore. No contact. And let me tell you, that's not going to work.
Job, thoughts on this?
Well, you know, you mentioned already, Matt, the starting pitching. That's where I was going to go next. But as far as the DJ stuff goes, are you opposed to giving him, you know, a fifth year? That seems to be the hang up at this point from DJ's end, at least, is that he wants that fifth year. Then it seems like the Yankees are holding out on getting it to him. Would you give him that fifth year?
Well, it's not my money. I'd give him a sixth and seventh year deal, too, if it would sweeten it for him. But no, here's the thing. LeMahieu's looking for like a 5 to 125. I don't see that. Could I see closer to 5 and 100 with incentives? Yes. But if I'm the stop, if I'm Hal Steinbrenner, if I'm this Yankees team, and you are outbid on DJ LeMahieu by, let's say hypothetically, the Mets or the Blue Jays or the Dodgers coming off a World Series title, that is not a good look. You haven't won a World Series since 2009, and the best, arguably the best pure hitter in the free agent market, who says he wants to return to your ball club, isn't going to return because you're not paying him the money? That doesn't work. You're the Yankees. You spend the money. You have the money. You spend the money. You win the World Series titles. That hasn't happened since 2009. So guess what? You got to spend more money.
You know,
that's an interesting take.
Yeah, I mean, there's, like you said, there's no comparable player to LeMahieu and Colton Wong. I mean, that is a pretty steep drop off, but I would still try to be creative, you know, in terms of acquiring someone, because I mean, you don't want to go through the penalties, you know, year after year again. And, you know, it's going to hurt you as far as drafting. And I mean, if you can't get a good second baseman, maybe compensate by going after a stud outfielder, you know, maybe get a guy like Osuna on a, you know, a 3 or 4 year deal and maybe get your offense that way. And he's probably not the best example, you know, because of his defense, but I think the Yankees eventually, you know, are going to want to, you know, not always be a top one or two payroll.
Let me say this. If the Yankees don't get LeMahieu, I think their backup plan is going to be Michael Brantley, left-handed hitting outfielder, sweet swing, 300-plus hitter. He's a guy I could see them going after if they don't get LeMahieu. But let me tell you something. If they don't get LeMahieu, there is going to be a lot of angry Yankee fans, and there's going to be a lot of blowback. And I know, you know, no one cares. Ownership is not supposed to care about the blowback. Going to have a lot of angry Yankee fans during a pandemic complaining. You're not going to want to hear it.
So, Matt, quick question. I want to move past kind of the DJ stuff for a minute and talk about that starting pitching thing you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Would there not be more angry Yankee fans if the starting pitchers kind of are the way they are now? I mean, who are some of the guys the Yankees should target, you know, in free agency to fix their rotation and not have Jordan Montgomery as your opening day starter?
Well, there's a lot of guys out there who you can, for lack of a better phrase, plug and chug. James Paxton, you can re-sign. He's going to be, he's been touching up 94 miles an hour on the radar gun. He's familiar. At his best, he's a 200-plus strikeout pitcher who's a lefty. Great for that rotation. Tanaka, there's conflicting reports coming out with Tanaka. If he doesn't come back, he's going to go to Japan. He says that's not necessarily the case. You're in play on him. You're in play on Paxton. Corey Kluber, I think, is an interesting name to keep an eye on. He's going to be throwing in a couple weeks, and he's a free agent out there, and I could see him addressing it on a one-year deal, because you got to keep in mind, this offseason, the starting pitching, there's a lot of names, but there's not like that big-time eight. There's not like a Syndergaard who's going to be coming out, I think, next year. Couple of years down the line, some guy who you're going to throw a massive amount of money on, and don't say Trevor Bauer, because I don't want Trevor Bauer anywhere near a Yankees uniform, because for a variety of reasons, one being as great a season as he had last year, it was against mostly NL and AL Central ball clubs who could not hit. So that's a separate thing. But there are a lot of older veteran guys you can plug into this rotation. Domingo Germán, granted the horrible stuff that happened, allegedly, and everything, that he got suspended by Major League Baseball, he's going to be coming back. That's another arm in that rotation. Clark Schmidt, David Garcia, good young guys will be there. I'm not as worried. Maybe I'm crazy just from listening to me for the last 5 minutes. You can probably ascertain that. But I don't see – I'm not as worried about the starting pitching, because there are names out there we can get. We need to solidify that lineup, because – let me ask you guys something. Who do you think the starting second baseman is come opening day? It could very well be Tyler Wade. And that is not something you want, period.
He's definitely a defensive replacement type player, you know, at best. But let me ask you about Tanaka, though. As a Red Sox fan, that, you know, we're active on the starting pitching market. To me, Tanaka is just completely washed. I wouldn't want the Red Sox to touch him with a 10-foot pole.
You know what? When push comes to shove, I'll take him on a 1-year deal because I feel like that's all you really need at the moment. Get everything year to year. Remember, after the 2021 season, there's a new CBA coming up. There's going to be more negotiations. I have a feeling they're going to I don't know this for certain. No one's told me anything, but I have a feeling the payroll tax and thresholds are going to go up. So you'll be able to spend more money with less penalty. So I just have a feeling that come the next few years, there will be more expenditures and there'll be more money you can put out on other guys. I'm fine with Tanaka on a 1-year deal right now as you build up the arms of Garcia and Schmidt and Michael King and Domingo Germán coming back. And you still got your ace, Gerrit Cole. And Jordan Montgomery is what I call Andy Pettit life. You're going to get, when at his best, you're going to get a good 5-6 innings out of him, and you can turn it over to the bullpen. And I think the best move the Yankees have made this offseason is not made by the Yankees, but made by the Tampa Bay Rays, who no longer have Charlie Morton and Blake Snell to deal with in the division. So that was the best Christmas present Yankee fans could have hoped to get last year.
Yeah, Tampa, it's tough to really get a sense on what their plans are short or long term, but you know, they're not going to be signing any starting pitching, and I'm really not worried about them. You know, as a Red Sox team that I think will be at least around 500, I'm still not worried about Tampa really doing a number on us this year without those two guys. Snell had a career 2.59 ERA against us, so happy to see him go. And then he had a career 4.31 ERA against you guys. So he was taking wins away from us, giving the wins to you guys. And it was just a terrible scenario for us. So, you know, he'll be out there. And yeah, and then Larry Rothschild, I mean, is he as effective as the Tampa pitching program? Like, if Snell goes into a rut, is Rothschild going to get him out of it? You know, he might. I don't know.
Let me just say, if I'm the Dodgers and the NL West right now, I'm shaking a bit with what you're seeing San Diego do. I'm very excited to see how that plays out next year between Darvish and Snell.
I said on a recent show, it might have been our YouTube exclusive, that you know the Dodgers Padres rivalry is going to be the premier rivalry this decade. You know, so yeah, so. The other big news, you know, in the last several months, Steve Cohen has purchased the New York Mets. And I'm just wondering if you're concerned at all if they may be trying to outbid you on certain, you know, free agents that you both might be targeting.
In a couple of ways. Let me start with this. I think the Yankees and Mets interest for this specific offseason, other than maybe DJ LeMahieu, are in different areas. So I'm not necessarily concerned about Cohen, you know, coming in on Tanaka or Paxton and outspending. I'm concerned about it in the long haul, because I could very easily see years down the road when Stanton is getting older and he's still being paid $30+ million every year. When you're going to have to pay Aaron Judge, when you're going to have to pay Gleyber Torres, when you're going to have to pay Gary Sanchez, even though you're probably not going to pay because they're probably going to let him go beyond when he hits free agency. I'm concerned down the line. I'm not really concerned this offseason. However, the Yankees need to, it's very hypocritical for me to say get their act in gear, because they just spent $324 million on Cole last offseason. But if you lose out on DJ LeMahieu, let's go back to that hypothetical. Let's say the Mets did sign LeMahieu. They gave him 5 years and 30, and the Yankees were only going up to 115. That would be both heartbreaking and pathetic on many fronts if you're the Yankees.
Matthew, real quick on that note, does it seem like a concern to Yankee fans? I'm not as in tune with Yankee fans as you are. Does it seem like a concern of Yankee fans that maybe the culture of the Mets and the fact that it's changing might entice free agents to choose the money in, you know, Mets, you know, in Queens rather than in the Bronx, because they're going to get more money, but also, you know, they're going to get to be the star of a team that doesn't have so many eyes on, so much pressure, but they get that New York lifestyle still. Is that kind of a concern at all?
It very well could be. I think, obviously, you know, I'm not a Yankee fan who despises the Mets. I respect, you know, the history of the organization. The first Mets manager was Casey Stengel, who led the Yankees to all the World Series titles back in the 40s and 50s. It's interesting because you got a good young nucleus there. You got Pete Alonso, Jeff McNeil, some good foundational pieces, and you have the money now with Steve Cohen. The days of, you know, the Wilpons and not spending anything to improve your ball club are long gone. You still have one of the top three pitchers in baseball in Jacob DeGrom. So it could very well be very enticing for free agents to go there. So as a Yankee fan, I am a little concerned long term. I think right now at this moment for this upcoming season, I'm not as concerned because I don't think the players that we're seeking are necessarily going to be the players that the Mets are seeking. I would be very surprised, like, if the Mets didn't get either George Springer or Trevor Bauer, two guys I don't see the Yankees going after, because they're going to be commanding way more money than any one in the Yankees would be willing to give at this point. But definitely long term, that's something that could worry.
So, talking long term and kind of moving in that direction, what do you think of signing Aaron Judge to an 8-10 year extension? Is that something the Yankees are considering? Is that something they should be considering? What are your thoughts?
I wouldn't do it. I was looking up some stuff in preparation today. Let's start with this. Since the start of the 2018 season, Aaron Judge has played in 63% of the Yankee regular season games. 242 out of like 360 or something. That's not good. He keeps getting injured. When he's on the field, he's one of the top five ball players in Major League Baseball. But the problem is the man does not stay on the field. He's going to hit free agency when he's older compared to what other guys would hit free agency. I think he's going to be around 30 or so, 31. He's going to be up there. I'm not giving Aaron Judge an 8-year contract. I'm not giving him a 6-year contract. If I were the Yankees, I'd offer him 125 to 150, because you can't afford to overpay a guy like Aaron Judge. Here's another thing. Since the start of 2019, Aaron Judge has played in 130 games. Do you know who's also played in 130 games for the Yankees in that span?
Who's that?
Mike Tauchman. You've seen Mike Tauchman on the field in a Yankee uniform just as much as you've seen Aaron Judge.
And well, that's definitely not going to help you win games.
No! There's no way I give Aaron Judge an 8-10 year deal. If I'm the Yankees, I'm saying, look, 5 years, 150, 30 million average AAV, that's all. Because let me tell you, the money you need to give in the upcoming years is for Gleyber Torres and the young pitcher, Devi Garcia, if he becomes everything Yankee fans are projecting him to be. Luis Severino, who's been injury prone, he's supposed to come back around June or July. I know they signed him to an extension a couple of years back, but he's barely pitched. He's going to be hitting free agency soon. Gary Sanchez, who I would not sign, I would let go. He's going to be hitting free agency soon. They might even try and look at him. I'm not willing to commit that much money and that much contract to a guy who's not going to stay on the – who hasn't proven to stay on the field while you're also paying another guy in Giancarlo Stanton, who cannot stay on the field, and he's the DH, so he doesn't even need to be on the field. He just needs to be at the plate, but he can't seem to do that either. You've got so much money tied up on the IL list, you can't afford to be giving that much money to Aaron Judge. And Yankee fans love him, and they, you know, they talk about him being like the next Jeter, that type of leadership ability, that type of gravitas. a type of aura that he gives. It's great when he's on the field, which is only 63% of the time over the last 3 years. You can't give him that much.
So I agree with you. Terry, I wonder what you think, because as a Red Sox fan, the one thing I really want the Yankees to do is sign him to one of those extensions. for the same reasons that Matt doesn't want him. That's why I want them to sign him. What are your thoughts kind of on Aaron Judge and whether or not he would accept a five-year deal at 29, 30 years of age?
I don't think he would accept a five-year offer if it was given to him tomorrow. And before I go to the rest of it, Matthew, how is it? He's going into his final year of arbitration, or is this arbitration two?
I think this is two. I think he's not a free agent after this season. You'll have to correct me if I'm wrong. I believe it's after the 2022 season.
I think
it might even be 2023.
So I'm looking at it now, and it looks like he's only under contract for 2021. This is his last year, but I couldn't be wrong there. I didn't have the most reliable of sources up at the time, so.
Here, I'm going to pull it up on him.
Actually, I'll have it right now. you think I would have this up already. Let's see. Earliest free agent is...
Oh, no, you're right. You're right. I'm sorry. Arbitration 3 is next season. So
yeah.
He's arbitration 2 this year, unrestricted free agent in 2023 at the age of 31.
Yeah, and he'll be 29 this year. So 31, like you said... And I think he's going to command at least an 8-year deal. And we'll kind of get into the Cashman aspect of it in a little bit. But I'm hoping the Yankees do sign him, obviously, because we're seeing right now that the prototype of a 6'8 player, you know, 280. Doesn't seem to be durable. Stanton can't stay on the field, like Matthew said. We're not seeing it with Judge. I think Judge is a lot more of a gamer than Stanton is as well. I think Judge is more likely to grind things out. If you go back to that 2019 postseason, that rib injury was sustained the last week of September, and he gutted it out through the postseason, was hitting home runs. I think he hit a home run in that final game when Altuve, you know, hit the walk-off when he may or may not have been wearing a buzzer. Who knows? But Judge will grind things out. And you look at the money that the Yankees have between Cole and Stanton. It's immense. I think Stanton's got something like 6 or 7 more years left. They have 8 more years left of Cole. If you tack on a massive Aaron Judge extension, that's almost $1 billion. Billion with a B on what's going to be tied up between those three players. And they still have to sign, you know, Glaber. They still need to go get maybe a stud free agent in a year or two. So I think a lot of Red Sox fans see the writing on the wall with Judge probably being injured for the bulk of his 30s. Players don't get healthier in their 30s. Ask Jacoby Ellsbury. You know, it just doesn't. Ask Dustin Pedroia. You know.
Ellsbury's salt in the wounds there. That's the greater salt.
My favorite Yankee signing of the last decade.
No. If Cashman would have signed Cano... Granted, that's not looking so good right now either. But no, Jacoby Ellsbury is the equivalent of me saying Bucky Dent to you guys. It's not good. You don't say it.
Yeah. And yeah, I won't get into 2011 with Jacoby and what he might have been up to get, you know, 30 home runs or however many it was, 32, I think it was. But yeah, so I think a lot of Red Sox fans are quietly hoping that the Judge extension does happen. And if you look at Cashman's track record with outfielders, it's not great. You know, we've already mentioned a few of them, Ellsbury, Stanton, you know, Judge, you know, came up through the system, but not a lot of durability there. Aaron Hicks, another guy, just doesn't seem to play a ton of games every year. So that's definitely...
They gave him a massive extension.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like the most money, but it was 7 years, and he's never he had never played more than like 120 something games in a year. And suddenly he's going to give you seven real good ones. And he's had Tommy John already in that early part of the deal. So I definitely think that the outfield is a weakness, for the Yankees. Next on the docket, I'm just kind of wondering about Aaron Boone. And I don't think the Yankees are going to have, a perfect roster coming into the year. And the division is wide open. I think Toronto is one or two more free agent signings from probably being at least a slight front runner. So what I'm wondering with Boone is, I was a little kind of surprised he kept his job, but do you think he's going to be competent enough to kind of conquer the obstacles that he'll have to conquer with a potentially flawed roster?
Well, a lot of Yankee fans are down on Boone. I've definitely balked at some of the questionable moves that have been made. If I saw Jonathan Holder pitch one more game, I think I was going to explode, because I never want to see him pitch a game for the Yankees again, unless it's against the Yankees. I think he's now with the Cubs, so I was very happy about that. You have to keep in mind, with baseball in this day and age, and I don't know this for certain, but I feel like the front office has a lot of say in how these lineups and how these moves are made and how, what you're going to do in game based off of preparation and the binders and the staff. That's what everyone got on Joe Girardi for, is because he stuck too much to that binder. I don't know if the blame is solely with Boone. I think he's a smart – look, let's take 2020 out of consideration here, because it was the year of COVID and so many horrible things happened that just getting a baseball season, I think, was a miracle. He won 100 plus games each year in his first two seasons as manager. It's not so much incompetence. I think as a Yankee fan, any season that's not a World Series winner is a failure, which means we failed every year since the start of 2010. That's with Girardi. That's with Boone. We've only won once since the start of 2001. Meanwhile, Red Sox have three World Series titles in that span. By the way, do you know what the last New York team to appear in a World Series was? It wasn't the Yankees. It was the Mets in 2015. So we can't even say we last appeared in a World Series before the New York Mets. So I think there's a lot going on. Boone's definitely going to be back, obviously, this year. I don't know about 2022 and beyond with the CBA and everything that's going to happen in baseball in general, with the rules changes and just everything that's going on in the game. My thoughts haven't really gotten that far yet. I think he'll be fine regular season. This is a playoff team. I'm not, especially with what Tampa has done to, honestly, just degrade their organization and their team, and trading away among their best players and losing Charlie Morton. I'm not worried about the regular season. It's the playoffs that I'm worried about. It's the having Devi Garcia open for Jay Happ in the postseason is what I'm worried about. And I don't think, and it's a hunch, I don't think those moves come from Boone. So it's not so much him I'm worried about as like the front, and not even like Brian Cashman, who is a very good guy. It's just the front office of the Yankees, I think, is more of a concern in that regard. As I think it is in all of Major League Baseball, where, front offices are running these teams now, not so much the managers. Look at Dave Roberts, World Series championship in Los Angeles. It's the front office who's running the show. Same thing in Tampa. Same thing almost everywhere.
Do you have a problem with that, though? Like, that whole concept of the manager not really calling the shots and, maybe the front office has a lot more say, that kind of came to the forefront in the final game of the World Series when Snell wasn't allowed to go, face the top of the order. And I wasn't really, a big proponent of Alex Cora coming back, but the one thing I did find comfort in is I know he's going to manage the team, and, he's going to have the final say, once the game starts, what move he makes or whether he's going to pinch hit or play small ball or whatever. in whatever situation. Are you comfortable with the concept of the front office having that much authority?
No. To be perfectly honest, I think there's, and I love baseball numbers. It's my life, but there are certain things you just can't quantify. And there are things experienced baseball men who are in the dugouts can pick up on that numbers, you know, someone's FIP might say that he's getting tired after so-and-so amount of innings. But you know what? The manager thinks, oh, he's still pitching well. Let me get what I can get out of him. There's a feel that can't be, you can't just put a number on it. And I feel like we've lost a lot of that in this day and age. Just the nuance of being able to make a decision that does go against the number. You know, everyone says, well, numbers never lie. They don't always tell the truth either, because you got to look at it in each given situation. And I feel like while information is helpful, and I feel like a lot of these next generation staff, like they've helped the pitchers with the spin rate, and I think that's good. But we've gotten a little too far with, oh my gosh, seeing the look on Mookie Betts' face when Blake Snell was taken out of that game in the World Series should tell you everything about that decision. And Kevin Cash was a catcher for a World Series championship team with the Red Sox and the Yankees. He's a baseball guy. He should know just by looking at Snell pitch that that is not the right move. But because the job and the statistician Bible say, thou shalt must do this, he had to do this. And we could very well be saying right now that if Blake Snell stayed in that game at that time, Tampa could have forced a game 7 and won the whole darn thing. And it's a completely different era.
Absolutely.
I couldn't agree more, Matthew. I think on the Snell take and on the front office kind of angle, Terry and I have talked that one to death a little bit about how we feel about it, especially with Cora coming back. But you kind of brought me to my next question. You know, you mentioned that you think it's kind of the front office that's calling the shots, and so you can't necessarily lay that on Boone. Can you not then lay that on Brian Cashman? I'm in personally, as a Red Sox fan who's watched this Yankee team my whole life, I feel like Brian Cashman has been given a lot of leash by Hal Steinbrenner. And if it had been George right now running the team, he wouldn't be there now, let alone have a contract still through, I think, 2023.
Let me tell you, if George is rolling in his grave right now, going 10 plus years without a World Series title, Boone would have been gone after 2019. Cashman would have sadly been gone long before that. And we wouldn't be worried about spending money on DJ LeMahieu, because he would have already been signed along with George Springer and Trevor Bauer. We'd have a whole set. So, yeah, if George were alive, things would be different. But the fact of the matter is, it's Hal's ball club, and I don't know if the blame should go on. Everyone, you know, I think Boone should take some of the blame. Ryan should take some. Hal should take some, in the sense that they haven't won a World Series since 2009. I was reading an article on MLB.com earlier that had a Hal Steinbrenner quote from after the season about how, you know, it's 100, you know, the season, you know, we didn't win a World Series, so in that sense, it's a failure. But is the season a failure? No. Last year, we won 103 games. Is that a failure? No. I know maybe people may disagree with me. Well, duh! We haven't won since 2009! And look, I know... I commend the Steinbrenners for their commitment to baseball and to the community and all that great stuff. This is not anything personal or anything like that. But there are simple numbers I think we can all agree on. The last time the Yankees won a World Series, 2009. And they've won one since 2001. In that same time span, we have as many World Series titles as the Chicago White Sox, as the Los Angeles Angels, as the Florida bleeping Marlins, who didn't make the postseason from 2004 until last year. And we have the same amount of World Series titles in that span as the Florida Marlins, and that's not the way it's supposed to be. I don't care that Jeter's the owner there. this has gotten my rants out, but let me tell you, we have the same amount of World Series titles. We are the Yankees. We don't settle for first place and get knocked out of the postseason. That's a Minnesota Twins thing. That's not a Yankee thing. Oh, sweet peaches and cream. But the point is that I think there's blame all around in the organization because you haven't won since 09. And until you win a World Series title, there's going to be blame.
Yeah, you know, and not to make it worse, but you actually didn't appear in a World Series that whole decade, let alone win one.
Well, fault and woo! Yeah. And you're right, and like I said before, the last New York team to appear in a World Series was the Mets under the Wilpon. We can't even do that!
Yeah,
the Astros.
You know, my gosh. I think... To me, Cashman, I think, is outdated. You know, he's got a 1990s, early 2000s mindset. You know, he's not – he doesn't build rosters like the modern-day GM, you know, like we're about to see with Bloom and what Bloom did in Tampa. You know, he's not like Friedman or Jeffrey Luhnow. I even think Theo Epstein is outdated as well, you know. And, you know, he might be a little more analytical than Cashman, but – a lot of these moves Cashman has made are just terrible. You know, the Stanton deal, the Ellsbury deal, just think of what you could have done with all that money. You know, the players you could have brought in who would have served the team that much better. And when we talk about Aaron Judge and the contract he's about to possibly get, the extension, that's going to be painful, and I don't think you can even compare that to trading Mookie. I think Mookie Betts is going to be a generational talent. He already is, and will sustain that through much of his 30s. And, you know, that's probably an okay signing. I hate contracts that size, but it's probably going to play out okay. I think it's pretty obvious that a Judge contract isn't going to play out as similarly. And I think it's okay for Cashman to either not sign him or trade him, as mind-boggling and as foreign of a thought as that might be to your average Yankee fan. I don't think there's any shame in that. And he made a comment, I guess there were trade rumors surrounding Gleyber Torres either last year or the year before, and Cashman's exact quote was, "I can't trade Torres. I have to walk around in this city. You know, I live here, you know?" And it's the same thing with Judge. And I just think his mindset for roster building is going to hurt the organization, you know, for years to come. And I think Steinbrenner has to make that difficult decision to go after, you know, a newer executive with a more present day mindset, you know, go get somebody out of the Dodgers organization or Tampa if they haven't been completely, you know, ransacked, because, you know, the Houston GM came from there. But I think that's what has to happen. And I don't know if he's on the hot seat, but he should be on the hot seat. Red Sox fans long before now, if he was our GM making the moves he made, we would have been calling for his head. I mean, we're on our fourth GM in the World Series era, maybe our fifth. I lost count. But it's, you know, I would be really frustrated with Cashman if I were a Yankees fan.
You know what? It's not so much. I don't think Cashman's going anywhere. I think what he's done for this organization, the loyalty and the fact that it is Hal and not George calling the shots right now, that I think Cashman's here to stay. I don't really have any anger towards that because I accept that situation, and I don't want to say I'm okay with it. Well, I am okay with it. I'm fine with Cashman calling the shots because it all comes down to a few things. One, you're the Yankees. You have the money. Maybe it sounds arrogant, but you know what? Fine. It's arrogant. Spend the money, win the title. But with the problem, we spent the money. We just haven't won the title. And I think if you gave Brian truth serum and injected it into him, he would say that the Stanton deal was obviously a mistake, taking in all that money. He wouldn't have signed Tiff. He wouldn't have gotten Carl Pavano back in, you know, 04. Jarrett Wright, oh my gosh. You want to give me Vietnam flashbacks. The Jarrett Wright signing was a total debacle. Just a bunch of Jacoby Ellsbury. Ooh, I'm reliving the ghost of Yankees past here. The point being that I don't know. With the Yankees, it's like you need to keep spending the money. We're not the Tampa Bay Rays, which, by the way, as a separate side note, seeing them 2 wins away from a World Series, not getting rid of their best players, what does that say to the fan? It's pathetic. At least the Marlins had the common decency to win the World Series in 97 and 03 before the fire sale. So I don't know. My whole point as a Yankee fan right now is you get DJ LeMahieu, you add to that rotation, you win out the regular season, you stay healthy, and you hit with runners in scoring position in the playoffs. Because if you do that, you can make it to the World Series. Now, I don't know if anyone can beat the Dodgers right now. They are the super team. I don't know if any, and if somehow the Padres do, I don't know if we can beat the Padres. My goal for 2021 is make the World Series and don't let the Mets anywhere near it for, you know, while to come.
So, Matthew, following up on that, Terry, I think you're totally right. Before I even get into that, Terry, I think you're totally right. If Cashman was in Boston, we'd be calling for his head. Some have been calling for their heads during winning seasons, you know, just because. But, Matthew, you mentioned that your kind of goal for the 2021 Yankees is to make the World Series. Why is it that, you know, somehow I feel like that seems to be – the bar seems to have been lowered by Yankees fans and even ownership to, you know, being a winning team, making the playoffs and having a decent run of it seems to now be the bar. You know, it's like the Boston Celtics of baseball. Like, it's okay to be good. You don't have to be great. We're going to pour a bunch of money into guys because they're fan favorites. It doesn't seem like Yankees baseball of old. Why is that?
I don't know. New generation, new era of fandom, new, you know, George Steinbrenner, God rest his soul, is not with the organization anymore. Can't use a Ouija board to make the contract negotiations. But my whole aspect of being a Yankee fan every year is the World Series. Right now, it's usually win the World Series. Right now, I'll take a World Series appearance with a bad call by an umpire that cost us, you know, the Game 7 victory. But you're absolutely right. The mindset is, oh, let's just make the playoffs, and, you know, if we're competitive every year, it's great. No, it's not. Because, again, and I hate to harp on this, 2009 was the last time we won. So until I can understand it to a degree, if we're coming off like 3 straight World Series titles and you want to retool and rebuild for the next couple of years and you're not spending, you know, the whole bank on questionable moves. Okay. But again, 2009, you have to give us something here. We've lost to the Astros. We lost to the Tigers. We've lost to the Red Sox in the playoffs. 2018, seeing that was the Brock Holt cycle, it destroyed me. It absolutely destroyed me. Losing to the Astros, we had a 3-2 lead against Houston in 2017. This whole baseball scandal with the Astros wouldn't have been as big if we had closed out Game 6 or 7.
We won't hold you that one against you because I know Terry and I both are anti-trash can people. But, you know, Matthew, I wanted to kind of say that I agree with you. I feel like kind of the bar has changed because of the millennial. Terry, do you feel like maybe the rivalry is suffering because of that?
Well, you know,
Yankees fans are satisfied.
It hasn't been much of a rivalry since 03, 04 when we had those two postseason appearances. And, you know, it was cool to play in 2018. You know, it was in the divisional series, which was a little shorter. But I even remember thinking at that time, it just didn't quite have the same feel, you know. And I get, you know, berated on Twitter, you know, for snide remarks that I make. You know, I think we've gotten really PC and it's not quite as, I don't know if cutthroat is the word for it, but, you know, I just don't think we can go after each other like we could when we were kids, you know. And so, you know, the teams are trending in two different directions right now. You know, the Red Sox are coming up slowly. I expect that to accelerate probably after this season, and certainly after the next season, once the, you know, all the bad money comes off the books. And I think the Yankees, I mean, they're going to make the playoffs because it's an expanded, you know, roster. But, you know, to me right now, I mean, I think they're an 85, 86 win team. So I don't know if you can call that trending down or what. But, you know, they're going to have to, you know, get creative on how, you know, they get their roster into a championship form. And I just don't see our rivalry being nearly as intense as what we're going to see in Southern California, you know, with those two teams. So, you know, if I'm wrong and the Yankees cruise into the World Series this year, more power to them. But neither of our two teams right now really look like they're, you know, going to go on that run.
I totally agree. Matthew, what do you think?
Sorry for that. You know what? It's interesting. I think the Yankees are okay for this year. When you said 85, 86 wins, you meant New York, I assume, not the Red Sox.
Yeah.
I would appreciate it if you replaced the 8 with the 9, because that's kind of where my mindset is with this ball club at the moment. I think it's also sad that, you know, when the Yankees lost in 2004 in the ALCS, this is 11-year-old Matthew. You know, there were tears coming down the face. I was heartbroken. I was crushed because it was my gym teacher, Mr. Baldino, fifth grade, predicted it. We were up 2-0 at the time, and he said, we're going to lose the series. And then we won game 3, and I said,
I like him.
He's a big Yankee fan. Very good man. Big Yankee fan. And he's telling me we're going to lose the series. And we just, then we won the next day and we were up for nothing. And I'm like, Mr. Baldino, you're crazy. And then he's like, just Matthew, just watch, mark my words and watch. And I watched over. And my brother at the time, because he loved Johnny Damon, was a Red Sox fan. So the biggest torment on my ginger soul was seeing my brother cheer for Johnny Damon as he hits the 2 home runs in that game 7. And I'm like pulling my hair out and going insane. And the reason I bring that up is that right now, at this moment in 2020, I do not hate the Red Sox as much as I despise the Tampa Bay Rays and the Houston Astros. I hate to break it to you guys, but you are my third most hated team at the moment, possibly fourth if Toronto or New York Mets sign DJ LeMahieu. So I'm sorry to break it to you, but I don't hate you as much as I should.
I start to feel like that's kind of the way that we're unfortunately trending in the rivalry. And that's because so many other teams are getting better. You know, Toronto's great. Terry kind of alluded to that already. But I definitely agree that's kind of the issue with why the rivalry doesn't feel the same, is because we're not hitting stride at the same moment, if that makes sense. The Yankees are currently trending down slowly, the Red Sox are trending up very slowly, and maybe we intersect, but it won't be at the peak, is kind of where I am there. That's kind of all I had on the rivalry aspect. Terry, you have anything else you wanted to add to that?
Well, he mentioned 04 and how, you know, his teacher knew that the Sox were going to come back. So, Matthew, I want to know, what was your moment of doom? Like, when did you know it was going to happen?
Oh, that's a tough one. I remember, I remember game 4 and, you know, the walk and Millar getting pinch run and all that. And there was doubt creeping to my mind then. And then before game 6, and I hear everyone talking about Curt Schilling being hurt. And I'm like, yes, we're going to destroy him. And look, his ankle is bleeding. Wait. He's pitching well. That's not good. And the moment Boston won game 6, I in my head was like, there's no way they don't win game 7. And then I remember, I think it was the top of the first inning. I'm in my parents' bedroom. And I think Damon, someone's thrown out at the plate to end the
Damon got thrown out at the plate.
And I was like, phew, okay, we're fine. And then we weren't. And then Kevin, was it Javier Vasquez, Kevin Brown that game? Am I misremembering that?
I think we had Bronson Arroyo go in the World Series, so it must have been Kevin Brown in Game 7.
Okay, was it? I feel like
Derek Lowe for us.
I was talking about the pitchers, the Yankees.
And I think it was Kevin Brown.
Yeah,
oh, it was Kevin Brown. It was Brown who gave up the both. Was it both homers to Damon or?
I think it was the first homer to Damon, the grand slam to Damon, and then also the David Ortiz 2-run shot for Kevin Brown. Don't know that he was still in the third, also, but you're really bringing me back here. I'm going to have to go watch 4 days in October on YouTube after the fact. This is like Christmas.
Let me just say one thing as I'm remembering this. You know when I knew the Yankees 04 season was done? Was when I'm listening. Maybe it was 05, right around there. I'm listening to the radio with my grandpa in Sussex County, New Jersey, and we're driving home, and I hear Susan Waldner, John Sterling say, "Well, Kevin Brown has reportedly punched a wall in the locker room." And I'm like, what? Are you stupid?
It's like David Ortiz destroying the phone in Baltimore. You know, there's kind of those moments that show you the real heart in guys. I remember when I started to feel hope, Tay, I don't know about you, but as I'm watching that series unfold, I'm kind of too young to understand the 86 years of torment. All I had in my head was Aaron Boone. And I'm like, don't let this happen again. Don't let us get swept. You know, just give us one. And then we won the first one. I was like, oh, you know, maybe just give us one more.
Yeah.
And then after showing it on the mound, it was like a whole different story.
Right. For me, I started to kind of believe it after game 5 because game 4 was a marathon. So was game 5. And I thought, okay, maybe we're breaking them. And then the Schilling thing kind of happened. And, yeah, and for sure, though, after Game 6, I felt so good about Game 7. And, you know, Lowe was the clincher. He was the clincher in the World Series as well. So he had two.
Lowe had a great postseason. He would have been, you know, the number one guy at any other World Series winning team for MVP. But on the 2004 team, he's like the sixth or seventh guy on the list.
Yeah.
It was a crazy, crazy postseason run from Derek Lowe.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, especially in game 7, Matthew, I don't know if you remember this, but I remember this very, very vividly. It's the Red Sox took that 10-3 lead on the Johnny Damon grand slam and Joe Buck calling that game. And he says, there's not a single Red Sox fan in Yankee Stadium or anywhere else that's comfortable with a 10-3 lead. That kind of summed up, you know, my whole life as a Red Sox fan right there against the Yankees. That's still how I feel. If the Red Sox are up by 6, I want to be up by 7. And maybe that's just me and the fandom doesn't really agree with me anymore, but I want to punish the Yankees when we play them. It's just the rivalry's not dead. It's just underground for a little while. And I'm ready to see a resurgence here pretty soon.
Well, let me put it this way. I don't recall that because by the time it hit 10-3, I can tell you I was not watching the game anymore. I wasn't old enough to drink, obviously, at 11, but I was probably hitting some ginger ale and just crying my tears, so I didn't hear Joe Buck say that. But I feel the same way in the sense that I never want to lose a game to Boston. After my grandpa died this year, I was in his house. I was by myself. I was watching the Yankees Red Sox game at Fenway Park. I think this is the game that someone broke into Fenway Park and the guy was like running around and they had to stop the field of play. And the Yankees were down like 9-1 at this point. And my blood was boiling. And the game meant nothing. You know, I think we'd already made the playoffs and we were close and everything. But it still angered the you know what out of me to see us losing to the Red Sox by that much. And that will always remain. There will always be a piece of my soul that despises the Red Sox. And I'm sure it's the same exact way with the Yankees till the end of time. But I think you're right that there needs to be a rekindling of this heated rivalry. Because, you know, the last few years. We haven't met. Well, last time we met in the playoffs was 04, right? Am I misremembering that?
No, 2018.
I blocked that part out of my memory for good reason. But other than that, there hasn't been that, like.
Yeah, 04 was the last one. Yeah.
The last big one, yeah.
Yeah, that, and it's crazy because it was 16 years ago, and to think that there hasn't been really any other flare-ups outside of 2018 is just crazy. And
well, I mean, there's the Ryan Dempster throwing at A-Rod. You know, there's little moments, there's little hopeful moments where I think maybe this is it. But really, you're right, Terry. Outside of that, not really there anymore.
Yeah, I forgot about that, but that was definitely a good moment. I wasn't on Twitter that year, so I wished I was. Although we were the Joe Kelly, I already forgot his name, Tyler.
Was it Thor? No.
I know exactly.
Tyler Austin.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that was kind of a fun moment on Twitter for Red Sox and Yankees fans, because both sides were claiming victory, and you know, but it was nice, and I think that was 2018 as well, and yeah, and fun fact, I actually, not so much fun for me, but I actually picked the Yankees to win that series, believe it or not. I wasn't comfortable with Chris Sale. You knew David Price was an automatic win, you know, for the Yankees, and Severino was going to be pitching at home, and his home road splits against the Red Sox are like night and day. And I thought, well, geez, he's pitching at home, so game three doesn't look good for us. And but, you know, we got the win with Sale, and apparently Cora kind of knew something about Severino tipping. And I'm not going to speculate on anything beyond that, knowing what we know now. But. You know, so it was kind of a nice surprise to win game three. And then game four was, I can't remember who even started that. It was either Porcello or Eovaldi, but we, you know.
Yeah, it was Rick Porcello.
Porcello game
four. Okay, yeah. And then that was the clincher that night. And then I picked us to lose to the Astros just because I thought the Astros were going to win the World Series anyway. You know, I didn't think I was really going out on the limb on that one, but. But yeah, so I thought the Yankees had a chance, and I've always wondered, you know, if Aaron Boone wasn't the manager and Joe Girardi still was, would the dynamics of that 2018 series against the Red Sox have been different, you know? And I guess we'll never know that. And I'm a big Girardi guy, so it's one of those things we'll never know, but. Anyway, I guess that's a good place to wrap it. So for the listening audience, we will be back midweek. We do have a show mapped out. But if developments happen, then those will take precedence, and those will be what the show ends up covering. So expect another show midweek, and hope you all stay warm. And as of today, according to Evan Drellick, still planning on a February start for pitchers and catchers. So hopefully that doesn't change, and we'll be monitoring that, in the coming days as well. Take care.
Power up fall projects with Ego at Lowe's. Every tool delivers power beyond belief. So whether it's leaves, limbs, or lawn cleanup, count on Ego to deliver the power, performance, and innovation you need. And now for a limited time, save up to $60 on select blowers, chainsaws, and pole saws. Shop Ego today at Lowe's. Offers valid through 10/1 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.